What is up, Baton Rouge? Welcome back to the Tiger Pride Podcast, presented by 225 Magazine. I'm Mark Clements, here as always with Jarrett Roser of TigerDetails.com. LSU with a resounding 50-7 win over Texas A&M. Dude, we talked about this game last week being one that LSU is going to be ready for, or really all season long, that it's one they're going to be ready for. You went to the player interviews, and all those dudes were pretty hyped about this matchup and the potential to, quote, go 12-0. Just in the pregame buildup and the pregame hype, is this kind of what you expected them to come out firing 28 unanswered, 21 points in the first quarter, and then, dominating performance by the defense? But is this kind of what you expected just when you felt the vibe of the players all week long?
Yeah, I thought they'd come out with energy. I kind of thought things might be more hostile earlier than they were. I thought LSU came out with really good energy, but that it was very professional, very focused, that they came out there just, businesslike as they have been pretty much all season, and ready to take care of the task at hand in an efficient football way. You saw some opportunities early for some chippiness with a couple hits and things like that from
First play of the game
from Texas A&M, and LSU kind of handled it smoothly though, and was able to just move the ball up and down the field. And a lot of that intensity and just kind of distaste for one another, I think, was overwhelmed by the LSU senior class and the last home game and all the emotions that went into that. Joe Burrow, with everything you saw from him before the game, and the EAUX jersey.
Right.
There was a lot of other energy for them that I think was able to kind of keep things in a good place for LSU. And I think ultimately you're seeing them hit a stride that I think bodes really well for how they handle these next 2 to 3 games as well.
I agree, and I want to get into that kind of piece of it. But let's go back to what you talked about with the introduction to the whole game when Joe Burrow comes on the field with his EAUX and the crowd.
It was a movie.
So you were in the stadium. I was watching from afar up in Indiana, up in Evansville. What was it like? It just seemed like, again, watching from afar, that I can't think in my lifetime, at least, of watching LSU, being involved with LSU in the program, of a more iconic image or moment that in the moment I know it's going to last more than this. The only thing that even ranks up there for me is, picturing a head coach lifting a crystal ball. But I think besides that, this is one of those moments that's going to live on, be replayed for, forever.
Yeah. As much as we talked about how much Louisiana and Joe Burrow have embraced one another, and just kind of the storybook run that he's having and that this team's having and the way it's all coming together and it being kind of a 30 for 30 vibe. If you look at the video that Matt Caron,
big props, dude,
came up with for LSU Creative following Joe out of the tunnel, the way it was shot, the
Scorsese-esque,
the color, and just as you see kind of over Joe's shoulder the perspective and hear the crowd, because you're with him before the crowd really erupts, and then you kind of hear it as you're seeing it. If that's not a movie scene, I don't really know what is a football movie scene. It was just picture perfect. And he came out and took care of business, became the SEC's leading passer in terms of yardage, tied Drew Locke's mark for touchdown passes in a season, and it was incredible to watch from him. It was an incredible way to end the regular season for this team. It just continues to be so storybook.
And this may not be a game that people necessarily remember the X's and O's of long term, but I think just the environment and the atmosphere and everything that built up to it, when you look at, like we mentioned, Joe Burrow's last game, LSU caps off the regular season 12-0. The revenge factor, everyone was so pumped to play A&M again and get that monkey off their chest from last year. The scene from post game, the student section seemed pretty much full, almost damn near till the end, until Joe was, you know, walked up to the crowd and they were chanting his name as he walked up the field. I mean, it's
another movie scene.
Yeah, it just seemed like this. Yeah, a lasting environment and moment.
When they got that safety on the, you know, the pursuit in the end zone and the intentional grounding and whatnot, that was the loudest I think I've seen that crowd be that late in that lopsided of a game, because right. So many people were still on hand, I think, recognized the significance of that evening for that team as a whole. And then I was standing there talking to Coy Moore. One of the commits after the game, he saw me and we were talking about just some high school ball. And then all of a sudden this mob started barreling toward us and I saw his eyes and I looked and realized it was Joe rushing toward the student section. And I was like, ta-ta, like I back to business.
Yeah.
And had to chase him with a little video over his shoulder for that, which was another really cool moment. And I'm just getting knocked side to side with everyone kind of elbowing around trying to get their camera space, because you knew it was kind of a historic moment. Everything was just so cool. And so much gets wrapped up in a Joe. I mean, we saw Braden Fajoco's last haka. We saw Jamar Chase have a huge day. Mm-hmm. You know, the big interception for Grant Delpit, that if he leaves as we anticipate, that, you know, it was a nice final home game for him. A lot of guys really all over that field had these different special moments in the lead up, the process of, and in the wake of that game.
I love the kind of the send off they had for Joe too, with letting him come in and get one more snap and then calling the timeout, letting him, it was almost like I know there's still more games to be played, but almost like a passing of the torch idea, you know, type feel when he goes and hugs Miles Brennan at some point and they, you know, sub out, whatever. So that seemed cool. I also wanted to touch on Apu Aika's little safety dance that's been floating around. That was nice. I appreciated Apu's.
Apu is a very fun watch. If you have a chance to watch him on game day from the moment he steps out there, he's just a dude that likes to have a good time. He's always dancing and singing and stuff like that. And so I think the more you see of him, the more fans are going to continue to see more of that sort of thing and just have a lot of fun with it, because he certainly is.
Yeah. So LSU comes out of the gate. First of all, maybe they were thinking too X's and O's or too logically, or I don't know. But after the ceremony and the reception that Joe Burrow got for senior night and the fans going nuts, to defer to the second half on the coin flip and put that dude on the field when you know that atmosphere and the vibe that it's going to be, and you put him on the field to open the kick, I thought was, questionable, bold, silly, however you want to call it. LSU takes advantage and marches 75 yards in six plays and goes up 7-0.
I mean,
I don't know what you're thinking.
They were going to march however many yards were in front of them, if not more so. If they had to go 145 yards, they were going to put up at least 7 points on that possession.
I mean, if I'm A&M, I'm never giving them the ball first. I'm doing whatever I can to slow that game down, take the crowd out of it, even to some degree. If you have the ball, get a couple first downs, burn a little bit of the clock, and just kind of let everything settle in. But nope.
Not that they were great at getting first downs.
They weren't. They weren't. They proceed to punt on their A&M punts on their first possession. LSU fires back with another touchdown. This one, Joe Burrow or Justin Jefferson wide open in the end zone. This is all on pace. Joe Burrow setting the record. I think it was the ensuing drive that he ended up hitting Clyde on the sidelines to break the record for passing yards in a season. He wound up with, or he's now at 4,366, which is a new SEC record. Obviously, with still at least two, hopefully three more games to go, that'll be shattered. And he's at 44 touchdowns, which is also tied for SEC record. Again, a record that he will break in the coming weeks.
Yeah, so those first three drives, they just kept going farther and farther down the field. 75 yards on the first drive, 80, and then 91. That third drive, the 78-yard touchdown to Jamar Chase was the longest play for either one of those guys, 13th longest pass play in LSU history. And he was kind of cruising along. Actually, that pass to Clyde where he went over the hump was on the first possession of the third quarter, because once they
– Was it that late?
Yeah. Wow. I had the story written for him likely at least matching both of the marks in the second quarter, because I kept waiting. Once they had those first few drives, I thought for sure in that second quarter that they would end up with a touchdown drive where he surpassed it. But the second quarter, the offense got slowed down a little bit. They just had that one field goal. And A&M was able to, I guess, you know, A&M didn't really stay on the field that much at that point still, but just not as many opportunities for LSU, and they didn't have that one more big drive in the half that I was expecting.
Given that they opened the game with four straight touchdowns, the relative success at the end of the second quarter, early third quarter, seemed like a big home run for A&M. But there was no doubt LSU was going to keep their foot on the gas, and they wound up dropping 50 on these dudes, which I know if they had the option, they would have kept going and do a little bit more if they could. But I think they were pleased with it. You touched on Ja'Marr Chase, and he was one that we talked about last week in the Blitnikoff Award and some of the dudes he's going up against. I think he probably won the award with his performance this weekend, if he didn't already have it. He now leads the nation in yards, touchdowns. He had 197 on the day with two more touchdowns. I think this is his. I don't know exactly dates when they end up deciding and awarding and all that stuff, but it seems like it's his to lose.
Yeah, they LSU entered the season with 9 ever 200-yard receiving games. He already had 2 and was 3 yards shy of a third, and I kept waiting for him to end up accounting for 25% of LSU's all-time 200-yard receiving games. He's the only receiver other than Josh Reed to have 2 to his name with his 2 this season. And I agree. I mean, we talked about some of the award stuff. I don't know. I'm not by any means under the impression that as great of a season they have, that LSU's going to go out there and win every award.
Right.
There have been some fantastic performances. But I think Joe Burrow as Heisman, Ja'Marr Chase as Biletnikoff, and Joe Brady as the Broyles, the assistant, I think lock those up. If one of those guys doesn't win that respective award, I just think that's really goofy. I don't know that someone can make a case for me that makes me feel differently. And I was close with I said last week I thought Ja'Marr or CeeDee Lamb ends up being the Biletnikoff. What a day by Ja'Marr.
He's been phenomenal. He's only a sophomore, and I know we'll do an episode as the season, I guess postseason. Doing a very, very early look at next season, but he's going to be obviously the centerpiece of the offense next year when they lose Joe and most likely Clyde as well. Going back to Joe Brady, you talk about the Broyles Award. He was named, I believe today, as one of 5 finalists. That list was narrowed from 15 to 5. So he's on the list. He's the only offensive assistant on the list. He's up there with Baylor's Phil Snow, defensive coordinator, Georgia's Dan Lanning, defensive coordinator, who LSU will face this weekend in the SEC championship game. Ohio State co-defensive coordinator / secondary coach Jeff Hafley, and Utah's defensive coordinator / safeties coach Morgan Scaly. Again, maybe we're biased because we watch game in and game out what LSU does every single week, but it seems just, again, we talked about it last week, but the LSU offense is the national storyline in college football, and what LSU's offense has been to what it is now, where it's setting records left and right. Whenever LSU was the brunt of college football jokes offensively for their antiquated old school offense, for him to come in and do what he's done, maybe we're biased, but I don't know how you don't give it to him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree entirely, very similarly to what I was saying last week when we were kind of going through the awards one by one. I think every one that you just named has done a fantastic job. Not many have turned around a side of the football that had been joked about and made it suddenly the national leader in many categories and just revolutionized the way that people look at the particular unit with which he works. And so I don't understand how you don't give that to Joe Brady.
And in the past few days, Texas is firing essentially their whole staff, and now these rumors leaking around that apparently Joe Brady is top of Texas's wish list for their offensive coordinator position.
You worried?
No, not even a little bit. Coach O already addressed it, and then you and I touched on it a little bit before we started recording. But you also feel pretty confident that LSU is going to lock this dude up for a while.
Yeah, that's been kind of the mindset for O and the program for a while now. The fact that Texas specifically has come into the mix is fresh, but people have been wondering about how long can LSU keep Joe Brady for much of the season, because they've been the nation's best offense for pretty much the entire season, and that's such a significant turnaround that you knew people would come calling for him. But they've had some preliminary conversations, and it seems like everything's going to get worked out for them to have an extension and raise here before very much longer. And I think ultimately, if it's not a head coaching position, that they're probably safe keeping Joe Brady here as one of the premier coordinators for one of the premier programs in the country. I think they should do whatever they have to do to keep him, and that appears to be the mindset that they have.
And that's great for LSU fans, because Joe Burrow finished the day 23 of 32 for 352 and 3 touchdowns. And he showed off pretty much everything that Joe Burrow does really well. He had a few rushes here and there. He had that one play where he kind of felt the blitz from the backside. He moved up in the pocket, moved back in the pocket, realized the O-line picked it up, and then throws a dart to Racy McMath over the middle for 9 yards. He had that long bomb you touched on to Ja'Marr Chase. So, I mean, he really showed off all of his attributes in this game. And we talked last week again about is there any shot Joe doesn't win the Heisman, even if it's posthumously. And you said there's no way. And again, he had another monster performance. And in a week where Chase Young is getting a lot of love and a lot of these clowns on Twitter and social media, and
you've gone pretty in on some of this Ohio State LSU stuff.
It's just because it's so silly. Like talking about, especially with Chase Young, a dude who missed two games, which is going to get him off of some ballots. Maybe not all of them, or obviously not all of them, but get him off some ballots. And then he goes up and, you know, people talking about, looking at Joel Klatt in particular, talking about, you know, big players and he's in the biggest moments. Chase Young's there. Your boy recorded no stats besides two QB hurries in the biggest game of their season so far. It's just that it's fabricated storylines. I mean, the award is Joe's to lose, and he showed that. He showed why on Saturday.
Yeah, there have been a hell of a push the last couple of weeks to just try and make the conversation interesting.
I mean, I get it, but like, just and come on.
Honestly, of all of the players that everyone is trying to push from Ohio State to be a Heisman candidate, Chase Young has been a phenomenal football player, affected games in a very big way. But as you mentioned, missed two games, and you know the rationale behind it and the NCAA rules, and that's a whole different story. Yep. But ultimately, he wasn't on the field those two games at the end of the day. And against Michigan on Saturday, he had those two hurries and not a whole hell of a lot else. Honestly, you look at the day that Justin Fields and J.K. Dobbins had, and those have been two guys referenced in the Heisman race. Those two guys, I think, may be the ones for the Buckeyes fans to hitch their wagon to try and make that argument, more so than Chase Young right now. But I just don't see how you go another way. The argument's so similar to the Joe Brady argument. And when you look at the record-setting performances and, I mean, the stats being larger and where they are larger, the schedule that they played against, as well as it being with an offense that had never done anything close to this. If it's not Joe Burrow, you got robbed.
Yeah, and I'll be really curious to see how these first, second, and third place tallies end up, you know, winding up when you look at all the voters and see where Joe falls on that list and who even gets a, can, who I don't know who can even steal a first place place vote from him. I don't, if you go other quarterbacks, I don't know how you justify Jalen Hurts or Justin Fields as a better overall season than Joe's had. If you want to make the argument that Chase Young is the best player in college football and AKA the best prospect, go for it. He still has not had a better season than Joe, so we'll see. But on the same note, when you these back and forths, like we're talking about on Twitter, with these tiffs with Ohio State fans, it almost comes off as like trying to knock Ohio State, which is not the case at all. I think it's more just giving LSU its proper credit where it's due. In particular, on the defensive side of the ball, which is kind of what the CFP committee last week, when Ohio State jumped LSU, that was what they, you know, tagged along to LSU and saying it was the defensive piece wasn't or was more impressive from Ohio State than from LSU. LSU showed up on Saturday, man. They held Texas A&M to 169 total yards, only 12 first downs, which you kind of referenced earlier. They weren't very good at getting first downs. 97 pass yards, 72 rush yards, and just the one touchdown. They picked off Kellen Mond three times. Looked like a defense that had heard some of that noise. I know Coach O says block out the noise, but it seemed like a defense that had heard kind of the critiques on them, and they came to play Saturday.
LSU had more points until the final couple of plays of the first half than Texas A&M had total offensive yards. LSU held, obviously, A&M to 7 points, but a lot of that set up by just that 145-yard play out of the backfield didn't play very well. I think Spiller getting real loose to the right side. Well-drawn-up play just confused some of the LSU guys. But other than that play setting up that one touchdown, you're looking at a Texas A&M offense that was held drastically below its season average to a point where, I mean, yardage totals were barely a third of what they average on a given Saturday. Kellen Mond, a dude who was quoted saying that he thought he was the best quarterback in the SEC, ends up 10 for 30 and just didn't look good. Was under duress a lot of the game, and even when he wasn't, was kind of sailing throws. And honestly, if this is what LSU's defense looks like for the next month and a half, everyone else should just go home. It's done.
Yeah.
If they can put anything close to the type of performance that they put together Saturday, getting after quarterbacks for, I mean, they had 6 sacks on Saturday. If they can get after a quarterback and have 4 or 5 sacks a game and be pressuring and whatnot and cover as well as they did, not just on the perimeters but across the middle, There's no point. Ohio State, just stay in Columbus. Clemson, stay in South Carolina. It's done, because if they're decent, Joe Burrow is going to carry this team to a national championship. And they were much better than decent on Saturday.
And I had the same thought, and I was trying to think after the game what is making this defense different than where they were early in the season. Because they've been under critique several games this year. People had question marks. I think all along we kind of said, like, let's not panic just yet, but it is something to keep your eye on, a mild concern. The things that stood out to me the most of what makes this defense different now is the freshmen / underclassmen are now dudes who have grown up, who have seen a lot of football, they got a lot of snaps, and they're now dudes you can trust. I mean, early in the year, we weren't talking about Mo Hampton or Marcel Brooks or really even Cordell Flott playing a ton of minutes. We mentioned Flott because of the lack of depth at cornerback, but not dudes getting substantial snaps. And now these dudes are in there in big plays. Mo Hampton in particular allows so much diversity with the safeties. You put Marcel and Kalavon on two different sides of the ball in those third down pass rush situations, and you got two just freak athletes coming after the quarterback. Dave Aranda does really well with the stunts to get those guys a lot of different looks. And then Flott has just improved. You know, early in the year when he had to come in, I think it was that Texas game, they picked on him on one of his first plays in the game. His coverage was really good, but the ball skills, he just had to, you know, turn around a little bit. I think he's grown up a lot. And even got that Damone Clark, who we had touched on having an impact, he's looked better and better. Just basically all these young dudes, all these freshmen and sophomores, or really even inexperienced redshirt sophomores or juniors, they're dudes you can trust now who have seen a lot of snaps, and it allows for so much more diversity, so many different looks.
Much more room for activities.
So much more room. Great reference. And this is a whole different defense, and I think they've improved so much. They've learned to play, how to balance their rotation and their stamina with what the offense is doing, and vice versa. The offense can control the ball a little better than they were earlier in the year. And you want to play your best football at the end of the year, heading into the postseason. And I think it's easy to say this is LSU's most complete 60 minutes they've had all season long, and it could not have come at a better time as they're entering the postseason. And I think those young dudes are really is kind of the bread and butter of why the rest of the pieces are working.
Absolutely. I agree with everything that you just said. They spent a lot of this season with absences on defense, whether because they were sitting guys, because guys were banged up. They had some other instances where guys were banged up but played anyway, like Grant Delpit against Ole Miss,
yeah.
And that kind of bit him a little bit at some times in that game. And
how much different did he look Saturday than he did at Ole Miss? I mean, it's a new
so
player.
So much different.
Yeah.
And so I think as they've kind of managed a lot of that and are now having all of those pieces back in the fold at the right time and having those younger guys progress, because I think it's going to be interesting to watch for this next month and a half, a few guys that you'll see become not household names necessarily, but for LSU fans, not the most adamant fans, but just kind of casual LSU fans, a few guys you'll end up seeing during the course of SEC championship and bowl game time become standouts that all of a sudden everyone knows going into next season. And Marcel Brooks and Mo Hampton are, I think, two prime candidates for that. And the things that they do now that the coaches feel more comfortable having them on the field more often and in more critical moments, it enables them to do so many more things defensively. And I think they've realized how capable they were, and now they're getting to a point in the season where suddenly the hand of cards is back full.
Yeah.
They're playing with everybody, and they've had a couple of young guys turn into much bigger pieces than they were a month or two ago. And you're gonna see them do a lot of different things now in these games. Now that everyone's healthy, you have all this time to prepare, and you have young guys that you can rely on in different positions. That I think is going to allow them to, as Bo kind of forecasted after this game, to play some of their best defensive football this season now.
And all that wound up with some monster days from a few different dudes. And we saw Delpit kind of back to his old self, roaming around all over the field. He had his interception, three tackles. He had a pass defended. He was just kind of, again, just looked, I don't know the right word. He just looked slow a little bit against Ole Miss, and he had kind of a pep in his step again on Saturday. And obviously, the biggest day was Caleb Von Chasson, who I think has been disruptive in a lot of previous games, but it wasn't necessarily resulting in stats. But to wind up with leading the team with six tackles, three solo, a sack and a half, LSU on the day finished with, six sacks?
Yep.
So just, again, all different dudes getting after the quarterback. It wasn't just dudes being more motivated or wanting revenge on A&M. It was different looks. It was different versatility and allowing those dudes to get one-on-ones and win those one-on-ones in different positions and get after Kellen Mond.
And Texas A&M is not Clemson. Texas A&M is not Ohio
right.
State. There are bigger challenges ahead, but Kellen Mond's the third leading passer in the SEC this season. Kellen Mond's not as critical as people may be of him. Kellen Mond's had himself a good season and a good career in this league. And I talked about last week, Texas A&M has some receivers that can hurt you.
They saw it last year.
They have some depth at that position that as some of the struggles that LSU has had defending the passing game over the middle, I thought that was an area of concern that A&M could put up more points this weekend than we ended up ultimately seeing. But LSU's ability between personnel and the way that Dave Aranda and company attacked them up front just was such a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can get any kind of production close to that moving forward, they are the best team in the country.
It was probably good to see for Dave Aranda, who's gotten burned by A&M and Jimbo in recent years. On the same note on these young dudes, I wanted to put out Ty Davis Price because he's the same thing that those guys we talked about on the defensive side are doing for that defense. He's providing for that offense, and they've gotten to the point, I think all throughout the year, they've given him a drive here and a drive there, and he's slowly and steadily seemed to be improving. And again, he had a touchdown again on Saturday and just looked comfortable. He had
three straight games with touchdowns.
Yeah, that big fourth down run where they didn't even hesitate, and they just went, I think it was a third and one, and Ty got stuffed and went right back to it on fourth and one. a run to the opposite side, and he ended up busting for like 10 or 12. So he's improving that offensive side of the ball. And again, a freshman who's coming to his own and a guy you can trust. And as long as those dudes keep improving and keep giving you reliable minutes, like you said, this team is going to be very, very hard to beat. You want to do players of the game?
Sure.
It seems like it's going to be almost unanimous for both sides of the ball. You want to go? You go first on offense. Actually, I'll go first on offense. You go first on defense, because I want to give you the easy pick on defense. But offense, I'll give it to Joe Burrow for breaking the record. Again, I read his stats earlier, but 23 of 32, 352, three touchdowns, setting records in the SEC that will probably hold for many, many years to come.
Yeah, and I think great game again by LSU up front, and Clyde doing his thing to help provide some balance to that offense. But Ja'Marr Chase caught 7 passes for 197 yards and 2 touchdowns. As we were talking about before, I think really solidified his odds of that Biletnikoff Award, further marked his 2019 season down in LSU and SEC history, and has just been you can't say he's been the Joe Burrow of that receiving core. That's kind of lofty, because what Joe's done is just kind of another level,
right?
But he's been as close to it as you realistically can be, I guess, from that position. Just phenomenal wide receiver in so many different ways, and able to absolutely dominate out there, whatever you try and do with him.
And I'll let you expand on the easy answer on defense. I'm going to take I'll go Patrick Queen and just highlight the day he had. And not only the day, but just the season he's had. When you're trying to replace a guy like Devin White, you can't do it with just one dude, but Patrick Queen has come pretty close. I mean, his athleticism, his ability to go sideline to sideline, and I mean, really rush up the middle. He finished the day with 4 tackles, 2 solo, a sack, a tackle for loss, a QB hurry, and really all season long, he's been pretty steady, a rock in the middle of that defense. And he's super athletic, and it'll be exciting to watch him continue to develop over the next few years. But you got yourself another stud at linebacker.
Yeah, and I think a lot of guys really played well on defense. I thought Christian Fulton, Derek Stingley Jr.
Yeah.
both did great. Grant Delpit was better than we've seen him at times this season. Jacoby Stevens and Maurice Hampton Jr. really good. Braden Fehoko, I thought, one of his best games, if not his best game this season, kind of doing his thing, helping up front. But I assume the easy answer that you're alluding to is Caleb Onchasson, who
yep.
had maybe his best game of the season. Had 6 total tackles to lead the team, 1.5 sacks, and was just a disruptive force that you're looking for in this type of a game to help lead that type of a pass rush that can help set this team apart.
And now LSU moves on to the SEC championship game to play against Georgia, who's been in there for, what, 3 consecutive years?
Yeah, this is only the 4th time in SEC championship game history that a team has made 3 straight appearances. Florida played in the first 5, Alabama played in the first 3, and then Alabama just finished a run of 3 straight a couple years ago. Now Georgia, 3 straight years in that big game. So, I mean, another impressive year by Georgia.
Yeah.
To get through a tough schedule with just that one loss that I'm sure they'd love to have that Saturday afternoon back.
It's hard to – I mean – obviously, you hold the loss against them because it happened, but that's obviously one of those games that if you play that game 100 times, that result probably happens like 2 or 3, you know what I mean? And it's such an outlier, and it's been held against them, but at the same time, they're still number 4 in the CFP, and they win this game, and they're just as innocent as anybody. Since then, they've rattled off 6 straight wins against Kentucky, Florida, Missouri, Auburn, A&M, Georgia Tech. So, I mean, a pretty decent schedule down the stretch, and they've looked good in all those games. They're got one of the most dominant defenses in the country, which is going to be really interesting. They are 4th in the nation in total defense, giving up 257 yards per game. And they're 2nd in scoring defense, allowing just 10.4 points per game. So obviously LSU is going to safely say they'll break that open. But their front 7 is really what makes this team go. I'll be really interested to see how LSU approaches this, because they played some really good front sevens earlier, which we thought if there was a type of team that could beat LSU, it would be one with a dominant front seven. But you look at some of these other teams LSU's played, like Florida and Auburn, and they've got the total defense and scoring defense pulled up, and total defense, Florida's 10, Auburn is 20, scoring defense, Florida's 8, Auburn's 16. So, I mean, right in that general ballpark, Georgia's a little bit better, obviously, but it'll be another challenge for that LSU front O-line against that front seven. But we've seen LSU and Joe Burrow kind of dink and dunk and do some of these short to mid-range passing games that has been kind of their bread and butter when they needed to get the ball out of Joe's hands quick. And I think that's kind of what you see a lot on Saturday as well.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia in that six-game stretch has outscored its opponents 164-51, which is pretty impressive when you look at the caliber of some of those teams, as you mentioned, including Florida and Auburn. And I think Georgia up front is as good as anyone that LSU has faced. And I think for as much as we'll talk about the sexier positions and the Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Justin Jefferson, on the flip side, DeAndre Swift and some of those guys, ultimately I think in the trenches is where this game has to be won, as ends up being the case so often in SEC football in particular. But LSU's got to protect Joe Burrow, give him a little bit of time. And on the flip side, we mentioned if LSU was able to have some success up front, they become a much bigger challenge to try to deal with, because ultimately Joe Burrow and company are going to move the football a fair amount on any team in the country. No defense is going to come out there and just completely shut them down. But this week will pose a challenge in that regard. One of their bigger challenges of the year to go out there 70 miles from campus, face a team that has played in this game now 3 straight years and has a defense of that caliber trying to slow them down. So it'll be fun. It'll be some big boy SEC football.
Yeah. And I think it's not a knock on Georgia at all, but I just don't – you mentioned Joe Burrow and this offense being able to move against anybody, and I don't know that Georgia's offense can can score. I mean
– Jake Fromm was so highly regarded at one point, and I was joking a couple weeks ago when he had another pretty miserable game. Was it the 110 yards at Auburn?
Yikes.
He wasn't very good. There have been a lot of games where he struggled.
I mean, Joe's almost doubled his yardage output on the season. Almost.
And I was joking, had people seen the Monstars aliens around Athens? Because I was wondering if somebody space jammed him.
He's middle of the mall.
He's
middle of the mall.
He's been pretty rough. And so if he does not have a good day, a really good day, I'm not saying if he isn't average, Georgia's going to have problems. He has to have one of his better days of the season, because I think Georgia's defense poses a challenge to LSU, and the LSU's probably not hanging 50 on him in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But I don't think Georgia's holding LSU under 20 or something either. And if you look at some of these SEC games that Georgia has won of late, they only scored 19 against this A&M team. They only scored 21 against Auburn. Things were kind of tight late. They haven't broken 30 in an SEC game since October 5th at Tennessee, who's terrible.
Oof. They're 55th in the nation in total offense at 420 yards a game, and they're 40th in the country in scoring offense at just under 33 points per game. It doesn't help either that as average as Jake Fromm's been and the running game, they have some dudes back there, but hasn't been quite as productive as in previous years. Doesn't help that George Pickens is out for the first half of that game for getting in a fight last week. And
how about Trey Swilling?
Dude, let's go. They're throwing hands.
The
little swell.
Look, Georgia has not fared well against Louisiana guys this year. Israel Mukuamu from South Carolina had 3 interceptions for South Carolina to hand Georgia its only loss of the season. Trey Swilling, a week before LSU and Georgia meet for an SEC championship, ends up kind of baiting Pickens into throwing punches, and now he has to sit for the first 2 quarters of a game against Trey's home state LSU Tigers.
Yeah. And Lawrence Kager is out with an injury. He just had surgery. reading a headline now that says he's doubtful. He's probably not going to play. And that's there are two leading receivers. They both have 33 catches. Pickens has 498 yards. Kager has 476. Their next leading receiver is Dominic Blaylock with 17 catches for 299. So that's going to be their number one dude for the first half. It just doesn't bode well. I mean, they lost
he
every.
He would be LSU, for contrast. He would be LSU's sixth leading receiver.
Yikes.
He would be Georgia's number one target on Saturday. And look, Racy McMath's not far behind him.
No. What Racy's a pro. Racy's going to get a lot of minutes next year. We can talk about the future at a different time. But I've tweeted this out during the game that Racy has all the tools to be an absolute stud at LSU. I think he's just fighting for minutes against three other absolute studs that are at LSU already.
Jake Fromm hasn't been great with all of the pieces, and he's going to have to face this LSU defense that has some momentum to it now without either of his top two targets for the first half and then Cager for the game. And so it sets up pretty tough for Georgia to try to hang with LSU, unless that Georgia defense can hold LSU much farther in check than I think is likely.
And then you think about how well Fulton's played the past, really all season, but in particular the past few weeks/months as Stingley develops, and we think he's probably the overall most talented cornerback on the team. You have those two dudes locking up there, what is going to be third and fourth receiver. It's going to be a lot of reliance on DeAndre Swift and hoping he can get something going. But
Swift's been a little bit banged up too.
Yeah, he's kind of questionable, I think.
They anticipate him playing, but it's a tough spot for Smart and Company in what essentially amounts to a play-in game to the college football playoffs.
What's good for LSU, you don't want to go against dudes that are hurt. You want to play – I never want to pull for guys getting hurt. But it's good for LSU because it's a good opportunity for them to – if they're going to fight their way back to the top seed in the CFP, they can do that by going out and blowing out Georgia, who they have – CFP has ranked number four. So if you think LSU blows out the team that the CFP currently thinks is fourth in the country and they can get a, 30-something point win and just assert their dominance in the Georgia Dome, or I guess the Mercedes-Benz Dome. Me and Kojo both called it the Georgia Dome. That's LSU's, really only shot to get back to number one, assuming we're recording this on a Monday. We're assuming that LSU is not number one again on Tuesday. I'd be pretty surprised if after Ohio State beat Michigan, they jump them. But, that's LSU's chance. I'm sure they're going to be – we talked about the leadership of this team too. They're going to be very focused, ready to go, not looking ahead. Coach O even said it in the presser today about if he's worried about 1-2, if he thinks that they're guaranteed to get in, which I kind of still think they are probably in, even with a close loss, but with the way the CFP has kind of unfolded this year, you don't want to risk any of that. So I think LSU will come out firing, and that's their shot to get back to number one.
LSU is trying to have such a historic season. The legacy that this group's leaving behind matters to it. They're also just competitive as hell.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they probably do make the college football playoffs, even with a loss on Saturday, that's not anything that's anywhere close to their mind. They want to go out and beat Georgia, go 13-0, win the SEC championship, no question marks, and just kind of keep on moving it forward. And three of LSU's past four SEC championship games have come against Georgia. None of them have been particularly close either way. LSU got the best of two of them. Obviously, that last trip, they just raced away from Georgia 42-10, and I'm not going to be surprised if Saturday ends up being that type of a game. I keep thinking back to that day and some concern about playing a really good Georgia team, a good Georgia defense, and doing it right there, right down the road from campus, and a really good LSU team coming out and playing huge and big games. And this LSU team, from the coaching staff to the player leaders, has been that type of team. And I think that they go into this game really geared up, and that Georgia doesn't have all of its pieces there to even play as well as they potentially could on another day.
The spread currently sits at LSU by 7.5. The way we're talking, it's a conference title game. Anything can happen. Two top four teams. It's hard to just go out and pick LSU to win, whatever you said, 42-10 or something. But with the way this offense has performed all season long, it's almost hard. It's almost silly to pick against them not covering the spread and putting up 35 to 40 something points every single time they go out. So you're going to say they cover the 7.5?
Oh, yeah. They might cover it twice. Oof. Maybe more. I don't know. But I do feel good that they cover it.
The way that LSU matches up, and I know LSU's had their critiques in the rushing game, but it hasn't all. They've struggled more. I felt like the Ole Miss game is standing out, but with rushing quarterbacks as opposed to when you know a running back, like, you know, Najee Harris didn't go off on him. P. Ryan from Florida didn't go off on him. I think they match up well with Swift and what he can do. And we talked about the receivers and the DB matching up and them being short man there. So I just struggle to see how Georgia can, even if they do find a way to put some drives together and score points, I don't know how they're going to outscore this LSU offense. So I'm with you. Do you have a number in your head?
Yeah, I've been kind of bouncing around similar ballpark. I think LSU certainly gets into the 30s, potentially the 40s. I think Georgia is able to put some more things together offensively than we saw from A&M.
Yeah.
But ultimately, with everyone missing and the ups and downs of Jake Fromm, I don't see them really being able to keep pace. So I'll go ahead and say 41 for LSU to 24 for Georgia. And with that 41, I think you're looking at a couple more nice Kate York kicks, which is something we didn't hit on about Saturday.
Oh, yeah, we didn't.
The 51 and 50-yard field goals from the freshman, incredibly encouraging this time of year. As much as you get excited about the defense playing the way it did on Saturday, we talked about how important having a reliable kicking game could be in some of these big games, and Kate York gave people a lot of reasons to be really confident in him after some points this year where that wasn't necessarily the case.
Yeah, he looked damn good. And again, that's another point. Yeah, you're right. We didn't touch on that. We probably should have. But another young dude who is, those kicks looked clean from the moment they left his foot. You know, Jake Fromm has had four straight games of less than 50% passing to close the year, four in a row.
How many games has Joe Burrow had this year where he's completed less than 70% of his passes?
How long has there been any?
Are you gonna
tell me right now?
His lowest of the season, 71.1%.
Jake's highest.
So if you're doing a position by position battle, I think you probably go Joe Heisman.
Jake Fromm against Murray State completed 90.9%. He was 10 for 11.
And then the Murray Stars got him.
Yeah, then correct. So my first thought, maybe I said 38-13 in my head. It almost seemed like I'm short-sighting LSU's offense, telling them limiting them to 38, because they have been so consistently getting in the 40s. But I'll give Georgia's defense some credit where it's due, because they have been really good against some strong opponents this year. So, 38-13, I think LSU scores early. And I think if they do score early, I don't know that Georgia has the dudes, especially with the receivers that they're missing, to make a comeback. So I'll go with that. And then I want to close with a couple other little just fun things. There's been some rumors circulating, some more valid than others, maybe as the week progresses and we get closer to Thursday when this is getting released. Maybe I'll do it Wednesday, whatever. But as people are listening to this, there's been some rumors, some better than others. Mike Leach to Ole Miss. Would you want to see that?
Cool. Can't wait to be in those press conferences.
Dude, I want Mike Leach. I don't care where he goes. Bring him to the SEC for the sound bites alone. I want to ask the dude a question about, like, I don't know, who would win in a fight between a Bronco and a stormtrooper, and just, like, let him go off for 30 minutes.
Talking about, like, horse or, like, the vehicle?
I don't know. Either one. Ask him about flat earths. See what he says.
Mike Leach is a lot of fun.
I mean, he's an absolute gem. I hope he gets a job somewhere. Other one was Lane Kiffin to Arkansas. Has been kind of bubbling on Twitter today.
Yeah, I've seen that one a little bit too. I remember joking around the time that LSU was hiring Orgeron, and then when some things were kind of bumpy there briefly with O for, you know, that first year or whatever, thinking about the possibility of Joey Freshwater coming to Baton Rouge, and was so relieved that I don't have to compete with Lane Kiffin on the dating scene.
would lose.
So excited that LSU ended up with a happily married head coach, family man, who I don't have to compete with for the ladies on Third Street. How much fun would those two dudes be in the SEC?
I would love it.
To not have to compete with dating wise, but just to get to quote a couple times a year.
Wouldn't you want to see? I feel like you and Lane, like I'm not at happy, dude. I'm not at happy's. Y'all would have some stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of maybe I was on if he doesn't end up at Arkansas on their trips to Baton Rouge, you can, yeah, see what kind of trouble you guys can get into. We'll have some more Jarrett Rosa story time.
My goodness.
And then lastly, we talked about it a little bit, but do you think LSU does have a shot to jump back to number one?
Yeah.
If they perform well, yeah?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll obviously see what happens on Saturday, but I think LSU's quality of win, if both those teams win, you have to say that LSU's quality of win and additional strength of schedule outweighs what Ohio State adds this weekend. I really think that both those teams have just kind of been back and forth, 1A, 1B, and mentioned last week that I think at the end of conference championship week that the committee is just going to look at, all right, how do we feel about these two teams right now? And after the performance against Texas A&M and whatever we see against Georgia, which I do kind of anticipate being a really strong performance by LSU, I think LSU has a really good chance of being number one again. Only time will tell.
Yeah. I did this on Twitter, but I looked at the full body of work from both schedules and the opponents that Ohio State and LSU has both played, because it seems to be a very hot topic that Ohio State's played nobody. Oh, but LSU gave up X number of yards to Ole Miss and all this stuff.
You've been the foremost LSU versus Ohio State beat reporter that I've seen in the past.
It actually
36, 48 hours.
It actually winds down to be a pretty even, kind of goes back and forth. So Ole Miss's opponents have a combined record of 82 and 62. LSU's opponents have a combined record of 75 and 69. So a slight nod to Ohio State's schedule. Offensive rank, this has kind of been the biggest talking point, is who has the opponent, who's each defense played against. That was the biggest piece the CFP had against LSU. Ohio State's combined opponents, if you take their offensive rank, I'm doing total yards, not points, because you can score points on pick sixes and fumbles, and you can give short field position, and you can return a kick, whatever.
It's true. It checks out.
Other ways to score points. So I'm doing total yards, fair or not. Average offensive rank for Ohio State of Ohio State's opponents is 82nd in the country. Yes. And average rank of LSU's opponents is 63. Not a ton better, but 20 notches better. Worth noting, LSU has played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in the top 70. Ohio State's only played 5 in the top 70. Ohio State's toughest opponent was Indiana, who finished the season ranked number 34. LSU's toughest was Alabama, who finished ranked number 7. Texas finished ranked number 15. So, dissect that as you will. But just to look at it, the overall point that I was trying to make is I don't think LSU's defense is substantially worse than Ohio State's to be given this knock. Is that the lone reason? If you just think that Ohio State's a more complete team, whatever reason, I don't think the defense should be the calling card. But
yeah, LSU's defense hasn't been great all season. They've had moments, but they have not been as bad most of the year as people try to act like they have been most of the year. But ultimately, people are really heated about this. And I'm sure some of it comes down to just the lore of wanting to be the number one ranked team in the country, but so much of it comes down to not wanting to have to play Clemson and then one another.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone's nearly as worried about whoever that fourth team is in the country right now as a Clemson team that has really played much better down the stretch. So that's the biggest piece to me is who gets to avoid Clemson.
Yeah.
and play potentially Utah.
Oklahoma
for that semifinal game.
Yeah, as much
and,
as
yeah, let the other two, let Clemson and the other one beat each other up a little bit.
As much as LSU and Ohio State are 1A and 1B, I think it's pretty safe that Clemson's in that next tier and probably a good notch above whoever's number three. But we'll see how it all plays out. LSU obviously on the road Saturday in Atlanta for the SEC championship game against Georgia. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at Jarrett Roser. I'm on Twitter at MarkClements225. And of course, all the 225 Magazine brands, facebook.com/225magazine, Instagram and Twitter at 225 Baton Rouge. Again, give the podcast a follow and a review. RIP Willie Rackham.
When you beat the Georgia Bulldog, you're gonna feel a bulldog bite.